for listening to the Hotel Guys podcast.
Rich, this is our fifth podcast or our fourth?
It is number five, Paul.
Wow.
This is so different. We're traveling Central America. It's Rich and Paul, the Hotel Guys, by the way. And we are just creating interesting stories. And
we do, and we have one today that we want to share with you. And we have a special guest with us. Nancy will join us, I'm sure, for the next podcast.
Yeah,
but today we have a friend that we're calling Linda.
Mm-hmm.
So welcome, Linda.
And
thanks, guys.
And
Canadian-born Linda.
Yes, and that's not a real name, but we're just going to use an alias because we're going to talk today about, as you already know, the title of this podcast is Money Laundering in Panama. Because that's where we're in, is Panama.
Yeah.
And it's really funny because I ran into somebody on my planning right before we left for the trip, Rich,
mm-hmm.
and they said to me, oh, you're going down to Panama to launder some money. And it was so funny because it's kind of like a way that people think about Panama.
It's true.
But we've only met one money launderer since we've been here, and she didn't work in Panama, but we're still naming it the Panama money laundering sort of podcast. But we're here with Linda today to talk about her life, her very interesting working career in the field of sports betting. And would you refer to yourself as a money launderer?
Legally, I suppose I was, but it didn't feel like it at the time, no.
So what did it feel like
Running a business.
Yeah, you so, just ran a business.
Yeah.
I want to ask, your very first job doing this, what was your role?
To start out with, I learned how to take wagers over the telephone. That's the first thing I did, and that was in the Dominican Republic.
What year?
I don't know. I remember Diana died, so whatever year it was that Princess Diana died, it was back that far.
99. I think it was about
99. Well, because I left the Dominican in 99, so it was before that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked in the sports book there for 3 or 4 years.
So, right, and so you got into that job taking the bets for, and these are North American sports bettors that are calling an 800 number.
Exactly.
That because the current laws in the U.S. were a little ambiguous, and that offshore betting like that was, the feds had not completely figured out what they were going to do with
it. The law's different in each state.
Yeah.
And it was, in some places, it was not illegal for you to place a bet, but it was illegal for me to take a bet. So if we had been in the States, they could say, oh, you can bet in Washington, but I can't take a bet in Washington. I'm just saying Washington. I don't know. So that was the way it was. Now, I know that recently the laws have changed regarding sports wagering in the United States, but back then?
Yeah, so we're talking about the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, you're taking bets.
Uh-huh.
How did you end up then, like, moving money all around the planet? I need to know.
I got really, really lucky.
I mean, it sounds like you were in an operation that where there was upward mobility, right? So
not to start out with, no.
So because what the names that we're also not using today, Linda is the guest that we have today with the Hotel Guys, and this is an alias name because she worked illegally, I guess you would say, as far as the U.S. was concerned,
mm-hmm.
Canadian-born guest today, but worked illegally in the sports betting arena, which was a billion-dollar business in the 1980s. 80s, right, Rich? Isn't that what our research, we did a little research before today's call.
We did.
And it is a very big business, and I think you told us before that a girlfriend got you the job. Is that right?
Yes. The sports book in the Dominican Republic closed. The guy who was backing it, I guess if they had a bad year, the guy who was backing it didn't want to continue because you've got to cover your losses regardless and pay your staff. So after working there for a while, he closed, and I knew was good friends with a girl who worked in the office. It was a very small sports book that I was working in.
But they were taking bets from North America?
Correct, yeah. You wear a headset and work a computer and the whole thing.
Just so this was before sort of the main man.
That was my introduction to to gambling.
And that way you got that job from...
I just heard about it from people saying, if you want to make good
money...
you want to
make some money, this is a place to go.
They pay good money. And they were paying $300 a week, and that was a lot of money back then.
Yeah.
That was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And we had run out of money completely. Had lost all of our savings, lost everything, as a lot of people do when they move to us, just pack up and move to a strange country,
yeah.
to a foreign country.
Eventually
the money just runs out.
You don't have any other sources. So then after all of that experience, you came to the big guy through a girlfriend who knew you from back when.
Yeah.
So you're really getting your upward mobility, and then you take bets for a number of years, and we're talking about football, of course, is massive, mega, and probably boxing and basketball right?
Huge.
So from, and you're taking bets
baseball.
From all over Canada and the U.S.
Yep.
So you were one of how many people in the office that were doing that?
I didn't take bets when we moved to Costa Rica. I worked in the office at that point in time.
Okay, so before that, though.
Before that, in the smaller office?
Yeah.
50, maybe.
Oh, wow. And then you went to the big time.
Yeah.
That was in the Dominican.
That was in the Dominican. And then over the years, when I left Costa Rica, there was over 500 people working in the company. And...
In Costa Rica.
In Costa Rica.
Yeah.
And that company was a sports betting company.
Right. That was the
legal.
Big guy. And
yes,
again, the big guy. I'm going to refer to him as
the
big
guy
because... We've decided not to actually use the name. It would be something that you would readily be able to Google. This is somebody who's appeared on 60 Minutes. It's somebody that you can easily read a very interesting background. And so then you went to work after some years of experience in the business in the Caribbean. You went into business for this big guy. And he, I mean, they don't come out and say it the way that I have read about him, but he sounds like he was a made guy.
Yeah.
Tell us more.
So he was basically,
he had a lot of friends from his time in the United States with men who were in the business, let's just say. He was good friends with Frank Rosenthal, who's very well known, and who was played by, was Robert De Niro? Or?
Right, that was the movie Casino.
Was Frank Rosenthal. And really all Frank Rosenthal was an odds maker. He was a fantastic odds maker. So, yes, he knew a lot of people in that business, but he wasn't directly involved in that business, but he knew people because he worked in that business.
Right, and this is before, I guess, the end of, I mean, the way the movie Casino portrays that by Robert De Niro, it's pretty dramatic time before... they kind of figured out how they were going to actually button down Las Vegas.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
So all the money is rolling in, and you're now...
Well, by this time, I was working in the office.
In the office, yeah.
Okay, so now I'm managing the floor, the customer service floor, not the wagering floor. It takes a lot of brains to be able to set the odds and to do that stuff in the wagering floor, which I cannot do at all. So I'm managing the staff, I'm paying salaries, managing the building. We had a big building by this time.
So what kind of a profit margin do they have on a business model like that?
My God, you know, I never really thought about it.
Because I'm going to guess...
If you have a bad year, if you lose, you have to cover all those losses. And this person that I worked for was famous for always paying, and he did always.
Right, and the way you read about him in the newspaper, the old newspaper clippings that he was, but he's a very interesting guy because it seemed like, you know, at the end, so he was a convicted felon 3 times, and, you know, which in the new sentencing, this is like he kind of straddled the changes in those sentencing laws that we all remember happened at a certain time.
Yeah.
But he was a three-time convicted felon in bookmaking, but when he was arrested a fourth time, he cooperated, and it became understood that he was really just this was like almost like one of his legitimate businesses.
Yeah.
And that he was involved in other things that international intelligence agencies were interested in, including terrorism, gun smuggling,
and
human trafficking were the three things that we read about. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like that this guy had sort of this bookmaking operation that he almost tried to run legitimately, but that to avoid a fourth felony conviction, he cooperated with the officials of interest on a very different palette of issues and sort of businesses.
If any of that
what do you
went
know
on,
about that?
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And I really don't believe that he had anything to do with any of those things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nothing whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Based on your
nothing.
Own interactions
absolutely
with him.
Absolutely nothing.
Because you were actually really friendly.
Why?
With him.
Why don't you believe that? He's
because,
got a history.
Because the man sat in his office with 16 television sets, day in and day out, hour after hour, watching every freaking sports game, horse racing, it didn't matter. He sat and he watched that office, that whole business is his life. He did not gamble. He did not gamble. But the whole business was a big gamble, wasn't it? So basically he was gambling, but he did not gamble at all.
He was
did not gamble.
Then,
exactly.
So,
he was. He's a brilliant man.
So he must have had to have a bank in order to make the payouts and actually set this whole thing up as not in it, not anything to say about the legal and business aspects of setting up a business like that. What was his bankroll?
Nothing. He didn't have anything to do with the money, handling the money at all. Absolutely nothing.
Wow.
He didn't want to go to jail again. I think that the last time he was arrested, he told me himself that he was very tired and he was getting on in years and he did not want to do this again. It was just beginning to be too much for him.
Yeah.
So he took himself apart from the business and let his second-in-command run the day-to-day things. He sat, like I said, in his office and he watched everything like God in his cloud above.
Yeah.
But his second-in-command started to run the business for him. Like, they talked all the time. I mean, he was still there,
yeah.
But he didn't.
And what year was
that
transition happened like that?
God, I don't remember. I don't have a clue.
You stopped working for
years.
Him in what year? It's 2019.
12? No, 7, 12.
Six or 7 years ago?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And at that time, he wasn't. His name has never been on anything, and he had no control. He did nothing except.
The number two guy.
No, the
number one guy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So let's talk about your next job promotion, because it sounds like there is one. So you're managing the floor in a 500-plus person operation, including the customer service. What, Rich?
What do you pay you?
Not enough.
After, yeah, okay. So, all right.
So, but you've got that job, and then you're tapped for a very unique and very specific skill set. Job. What was that?
Well, the money starts to roll in. It's a ludicrous.
It's a high profit business.
I mean, it just starts rolling in, and they have nowhere to put it.
Like per day, like when you say it rolls in, like.
Like it comes in.
God. Hundreds of thousands a month, and nowhere to put this money. So. We started branching out to Latin America and opening offices in South America and in Spain because he saw a way to go with soccer because Americans don't bet soccer. So it had never been in the forefront.
So, but because of his time in the Caribbean,
and
he realized how big.
In Latin America, he could open what they call walk-ins, which is like your neighborhood bookie in England, where a guy can just walk in. There is one here from the company that I used to work. There's one here in David. So they met somebody in Spain, a man who knew contacts in the banking business and said to the guy in Spain, okay, if you want to open banks in Spain, bank accounts in Spain or in Europe, I can help. So I was the one that was chosen, being Canadian, being an older woman, being trustworthy. I was the one that was chosen to go to Europe as a representative of all these different companies, because you had to put all the money in all these different places. You couldn't put it all in one place. So there's, you know, 6-12 companies with euro accounts and dollar accounts and
holding the
else.
Proceeds of all of the sports betting.
Yes.
And you were kind of looking after that, and then you were tapped because you had the right sort of overall...
The image. I didn't look like a terrorist, and I could present myself well, so...
I know.
Yeah.
And this is all after 9-11. And this is all after 9-11.
After 9-11.
Yes, yes.
And things changed a lot in that area, as it did.
That was when I first went to Costa Rica, was 99, and then 9-11 was shortly thereafter.
So then what did that... So you're in the office in Costa Rica... And you're going to do this other job, extra job, for the organization to help this guy who suggested that, you know, he could help to open these bank accounts.
In Spain
and other places.
Cool travel spots. Yeah.
So then you started to just, what, did you physically take the money to the bank? Or what? How did this work?
No, it's all wire transfer. No, I never physically took any money. It's all wire transfer. Yeah. No. I started out by going from Costa Rica to Madrid. And then from using Madrid as a home base, he would have set up meetings at different banks in Madrid and Malta. Malta's a very good place to put your money if you want. Sweden, all these places.
Prearranged the meetings for you to meet with. So just out of curiosity, just because I watched too many movies, did the big guy, as we're referring to, a very famous...
Probably the biggest bookie in the U.S.
Did he pay your friend in Spain to preset those meetings?
When he started out, he was making 3,000 euros a month, next to nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And of course he paid for all of our traveling expenses, and I always went with the company lawyer.
Well.
The first year that I went, Tom came with me because I didn't... You know, Sophia and, shouldn't say the name. we didn't know who we were meeting, where we were going, what we were doing, so we felt more comfortable having
somebody with us.
Yeah, it just kind of, so you're going, so you have how many days you fly to Madrid for how many days?
The overall trips usually took 4 weeks.
Okay, because you had to, like, be on the ground and respond to the necessary requirements, the administrative requirements.
4 weeks per bank?
Just for the whole trip.
Oh, yeah,
just for the whole trip.
Okay. Yeah.
All around.
And then you opened up a total, what did you say, 20?
Well, on that trip.
Yeah. I went 4 times and opened different accounts in different countries at different times.
Right.
Uh-huh. And I was the... the person who owned the companies that the money was coming through. So what would happen is I would go and have a meeting. It could be a big bank, it could be a small bank. It was different all the time. So you go in and you meet the manager of the bank and you sit down. There's the three of us, the lawyer with me and the man who's introducing us. And he's already told them that I have nothing to do with gambling. That I am this wealthy woman and I have investment money that my friends have given me and I need to put it here, there, and the other, and I will need to move it around. Only so much a month will come in and only so much a month will go out, so that the bank feels very comfortable about what they're getting. And based on that, they either open an account for me or they don't. And usually they did.
Did you feel like an actress when you were...
Yes, absolutely. I never thought of that. That's
we did. It's funny. Earlier, we were realizing, after we were learning more about the big guy...
Tell me more about kind of the role of kind of being the super wealthy.
Yeah, I had to pretend that I was a person who was extremely wealthy, which I wasn't.
Was that fun?
Poised, I'm sure.
It was a lot of fun.
Well, because
thank God my mother taught me manners.
Okay, so you're like this trip to Madrid and other places for a month... Initially, anyway, you're like in 5-star accommodation. You're playing the part.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then sometimes your husband would come with you. So you guys have lived a really kind of interesting several years, right? 7 years.
Very, very interesting.
Linda, I just know myself, in being in those roles, I would be like a mess. Did you ever feel like in a bank, they could entrap you or... Because you were never arrested, you're never charged in laundering money, so... But you've never felt that kind of level of fear.
No.
So...
Okay, that's just me then.
Yeah, yeah. I mean... Because I felt that I was presenting what I was.
Yeah.
Was a cultured person, because thank God, like I said, my mother... At least she gave me some cultural,
And a good handbag and a pair of shoes.
I knew which fork and knife to use, and
So then of the accounts that you would open, tomorrow. Just so that I can get an idea, like I'm kind of interested in like the bank side of the situation. Oh. How much money were you looking to deposit?
It would depend on the bank. It was much better to move the money around. $1 million a month in each account. Because I also had to then bring some of that money to pay payroll and to run the building and to do all those things that you need money for. So the money would come in.
So you were opening an account of several million dollars per bank.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the money would come in and then...
And then it would just sit there and...
Right, and then you'd need... So you'd add to it or you'd take away from it.
And I have to pay people sometimes, too. Okay,
so the key was really in the number of accounts that you had to work with, because you're just really massaging a large dough, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was.
Yeah, so you're just kind of... I get it. You're just kind of massaging...
So was the big guy still up in the upper room?
Oh, yeah. This is
telling you where to move
it? No, he didn't tell me anything. I did it on my own.
You moved all this stuff around?
I did it myself.
Like a chess game?
So,
And again, I have to know, what was your salary annually when he was watching sports
but
and masterminding it at all? It's fascinating. Roughly.
Oh... the last year, we'll take the last year, 200, tax-free.
200,000.
U.S. Yeah, tax-free.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Wow. Yes.
And then, of course, like, you're already, and then you're tricked out, like, you know, not that we always have to fly first class, but you're flying well, you're staying in good places, and you're doing something unusual. Opening multiple million-dollar bank accounts.
Yeah.
So let me ask you from the bank standpoint, because that's I read these stories in the newspapers, and I always think, yeah, but the banks know, right? So did the bank just expect you to expect the money that was coming at them to just put the best face on it and they just played along?
Yes.
Or did they Or did they feel like, because that's what it feels like, right?
To give you an example. We had a bank account in Portugal, and it was a small account in a small town. Mm-hmm. And the bank manager was a lovely man. And this was before the euro problem and all the banking, the money problems that they had in Spain and Portugal and Greece.
Right.
And
so they welcomed the liquidity.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and he was very happy. But then when the Americans got really tight and they started putting the pressure on and he had to close the account. I heard that the poor man had a nervous breakdown because he was trying to run his business and these people were his friends in this bank, in this town, and all that money was gone because we had to close the account to take the money out.
So you actually broke like the bank branch in Spain? Because you had
Portugal.
In Portugal.
Now Spain, he was a sweetheart. He called me and said, quick, send me a letter requesting to close your accounts, backdated 3 months, because he knew they were going to be investigated. So I sent the letter off and he sent me back my money. Otherwise, they would have told them, they would have frozen the funds and I wouldn't have gotten them out.
Wow.
And how much money was
he was
in
really
that
nice. 500 grand, I think.
Yeah. But that didn't break.
But that, I mean, you know, he gave me a heads up. He was it was unspoken when we sat. 99% of the time, they knew what I was doing. They knew where the money was coming
from. But you've
from.
Had some, wow. you told us that wow. you had some places wow. where they turned you down. They would not let you open a multi-million dollar bank.
Santander, which is a very large bank, they wouldn't even let us pass the door. They
Do you have any idea why?
No, I don't know why.
But otherwise, that's the only one. It wasn't like you had
Hong
a sit
Kong.
Down and they said
Hong
no.
Hong Kong did not allow us to open an account, and neither did Gibraltar.
What, they didn't like your paperwork?
No, they just, they knew what it was and they didn't want to get involved in it,
okay.
I guess. They just, I mean, everybody knows that Gibraltar's a tax haven and everything, so they really didn't need the money. I guess they just said, nah,
yeah,
don't want it.
But, yeah, wow.
Yeah.
So
it's a hell of a life, believe me. It was like a dream. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. I can't say anything. I never felt like I was doing anything wrong. I felt that Americans wanted to gamble. They should be able to gamble.
Yeah.
They're all big on their personal rights. And
well, the government's answer appears to be trying to make a way to profit off of it themselves.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, this big guy that I'm quite interested to learn more about.
He's still alive, but
is he still alive?
Oh, yeah,
he is.
And but I just wonder, this whole
mid-70s now.
Yeah, this whole terrorism, gun running, and
that's not true.
Human trafficking angle that they try to pin on him. Hey, like we know, you can't really believe anything about anything anymore.
No, none of it. None of
but
that is true.
But it's just kind of interesting how the particular press that I was reading was a really positive thing, and they throw that in at the end. And
they threw that in at the end.
Kind of. Well, it was the explanation about how he got out of the fourth felony.
What was the source? Oh, you can't go there. No, don't
I'm not sure
there.
I can.
Sorry.
I don't know why I'm under some kind of non-disclosure.
Yeah, it's best.
Yeah.
We all want to be safe.
So, but then you told us before that this job became too stressful to continue to do.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. Because it sounds like it was kind of like fun.
Yeah.
You guys had fun vacations.
Yeah. No, it wasn't a vacation. It was traveling. It was traveling.
Business
travel. Playing a part.
Yeah.
Being something
that you really
that
not.
I really wasn't.
Yeah.
The entire time being on, having to take care of all this money, having this money be my responsibility for the whole company to make sure everybody gets paid, to make sure everything keeps going.
So were you the only person, was your work, did it encompass the entire company's efforts?
Yes.
So it wasn't like they did a split.
Unless
where,
they had money somewhere else that I didn't know about.
But from as far as you knew, from this bookmaking operation, you had it all.
I had it all.
And so all these companies were in your name too.
Yes.
Incredible.
So
this
what did you do to gain that level of trust from them? Because this was again, $1 billion business in the 80s.
And he keeps coming back because he
after every
like
felony he gets like right and he gets out of prison
through.
Early
because he knows the
here and there
the
he's probably one of the reasons they did the three strikes and you're out bill
well
which is three felonies and you're gone for life no matter what the charge
it'd be a great movie.
Oh, his life would be an incredible movie.
So I know you said it really had a big impact on your health.
Yeah.
And I remember earlier when we had first met you, Linda, it was like you had told some story about a work colleague that had made a big blunder. Would you retell that to me and how it just
sure.
almost
Sure, let
put
me just say, too,
edge?
That I really don't like to fly.
Even if it's first class?
I'm a very nervous flyer.
So
that was also very stressful.
Well, I guess it's champagne instead of orange juice.
I wanted to go so badly where I was going that I would do it.
Yeah.
But the whole time I'm on the plane, my heart's going like this.
Yeah, so you've really traveled
all over. I would take sleeping pills so I could sleep on the plane.
Yeah.
Travel a distance. Yeah.
As well as the big guy getting indicted... there was, the second in command was indicted at one point in time, but that was several years before, so he was just indicted for bookmaking as well.
I think that was when he was in the Dominican, if I remember what
I
read.
Yeah, we did read that.
Yeah, but he was basically in Costa Rica, he was the main guy that you were really reporting to.
The young guy.
It's a lot of money. So overall,
they hired a person who shall remain nameless because I was never fond of this person and nobody in the company except for the big guy, the second big guy, not the first big guy, cared for this person who said she was an accountant and I use quotation marks.
In the air.
She made a boo-boo of signing her name on a processor, which is somebody who processes the money that the gamblers are sending to you. She signed her name on one of the papers, and it was in the Pacific Islands. It was an American, you guys have an American-owned island.
American Samoa?
Guam or Samoa?
Samoa.
Anyway, some island there. Mm-hmm. So, and it was all sting. It was set up.
Oh.
It was set up. She was set up.
By
I never, see, I only had my name on the companies that owned the bank accounts. I never had my name on the processors that were processing the funds coming through.
And that was at your direction?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't want my
And you knew that that was stuff. The difference between
yes.
what could be a
yeah,
snag.
Exactly. They had heard through the grapevine, they always hear that somebody's getting
uh-huh.
indicted before it happens.
Uh-huh.
They had heard that someone was getting indicted, they thought it was me. So immediately, because I have all this money in my name, shipped me from Costa Rica to Panama. So fast, and he was so worried that I was still coming out of immigration at the airport, and he called me to make sure I got through okay. Because I think he thought I was going to get stopped. So by this point,
know,
I'm thinking...
Did you know it was that dramatic?
No, I didn't know it was that
Why
dramatic.
Were you... So what did he tell you where you were coming here for?
He just said that there's something going on, and so we want you to go...
To just fly to Panama.
Yeah, because so, I did not have residency in Costa Rica.
Okay.
So I could have been extradited. Although Costa Rica does not have extradition.
So you have your home, your kind of family,
yeah.
grounded
yep.
space there, and now you're told to go to Panama.
Yep.
And this was this at the beginning
within,
of the year?
Within a couple of days.
Wow.
Was this then the beginning of the year at the Trump Tower?
No.
Uh-huh.
2011, I was in Destiny.
Okay, in Panama
and the
City.
Funny thing is that we had
Destiny building.
We had a company called Destiny as well. And I remember one of the banks in Europe asking me if I owned the building. Now you've seen that building and I'm
yes.
thinking, oh God, I wish.
Yeah, you should.
Just because it was a coincidence that the building was in the same name as
yeah,
one of
yeah.
the companies.
High rise in Panama.
Yeah.
High rise in Panama
yeah.
City.
Yes, I did.
For a year
then
and
I went back to Costa Rica and
so
that was when I said...
The dust settled.
Yeah.
And
it was another person.
It was her, not
so
you.
So it was okay.
That got indicted.
Yeah. So then when I went back and I said... Okay, this...
You can't do it anymore.
No. I just... At this point, I'm 60. I don't want to go to jail. I don't have residency in Costa Rica, which was very upsetting. And...
Because you'd lived there a long time.
12 years, yeah.
Yeah, so would that... So every... So you had to just... You did the border runs all the time.
No.
You just, well, you
no.
were always traveling
no.
anyway.
No, what happened... It's just as bad as anywhere. When I first started working there, I had a work visa in my passport. And so when I applied for my residency, lo and behold, my work visa is a forgery and was paid for and put in my passport. And so, of course, now the immigration
wow.
office in Costa Rica is going, who is this person? Why is this person now asking for it? And I had no clue it was... Not a legal work permit.
How did that
so happen? For several years I was going in and out with this work permit that wasn't even legal. So in order to apply for residency in Costa Rica, we had to go back to Canada and get our police
yeah.
reports because in Canada you can't get a police report online. You have to physically go and get it.
Yeah.
I see.
So we did that. And then they had an election. And so all the papers were lost. So we still didn't get residency.
So 12 years,
yeah.
and then they
didn't really care because I was then traveling for business. So
right.
I was going in
so
and out.
So you were going in and
so
out
by
that.
So it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So back
yeah.
to the woman in the office that signed her real name.
Yes.
Who got set up. Did she go to
no.
prison?
She was married. She had two children born in Costa Rica and had quickly married the father of those children. So that she, to protect herself, so she couldn't get extradited because, damn, and so now she is Costa Rican.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I just had to hear that part.
Yeah.
So then, you went back and you continued on, it sounds like, for a few more years then before.
No, just one.
Just one
just
more
one,
year.
Just one.
And then you just said
so
you were
So then they
done.
Sent me back again 2012. Put me in
to
the Trump Tower
Panama
for,
City,
for
yeah.
a year. Well, it was a few months still in Destiny because the lease had been renewed for another year.
Right, which is like a kilometer from the Trump Tower. Yeah.
And then...
No longer the Trump Tower.
The JW Marriott. Thank you.
It was called Trump Ocean Club. It even says it on my
But everybody that stayed there loved it, but of course we could never stay there just because of the name. But
exactly. Okay.
I lived there.
But you loved it. You guys lived there for a year.
Well, we lived there, yes.
So, but you were still on payroll. I mean, you weren't doing anything, but you were extricating yourself,
yes,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
From the whole organization.
And, I was still,
and they needed you to kind of be there in order to, did you have to occasionally sign something and that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Take Federal Express and sign things and send it back.
Exactly.
Well,
in the meantime, you're just living on the 100th floor of the Trump Tower.
Yep.
With all, like, everything paid for there?
Yeah.
And were you still on salary at that time?
Yes.
I'm always curious about how you make money as a bookie who doesn't get caught. How much did they pay you?
Okay, I'm telling you what they were paying. They were paying me $10,000 a month. But, remember, this money is going offshore.
Your money has
My
to go
money,
too.
I had a bank account in Malta. Uh-huh. And I never had money in Costa Rica. Never, except, I was covered under all of the CAHA, the medical insurance and everything in Costa Rica, because they would pay me $1,000 in Costa Rica, and the rest of my money went offshore into my own bank account that I opened in Malta.
Got it.
So then when they paid me, it would go to Malta, and then I would just pull it down when I needed it and have it sent here.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
I've been to Malta with 40.
It's a really nice place. I really liked it
Blue
a lot.
And blue.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
Would you do this again?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I would. I mean, you can't dream up a life like that, can you?
No, and you couldn't think that it would lead to that,
and
too.
This is why, you know, we talked about writing a book. I would love, if I knew how to write a book, I would love to write a book, because I was saying this to my husband the other day, that the world is getting so much smaller.
Oh.
And there's so many people my age now, too. But I want to reach those people. I mean, my husband and I left Canada when we were in our mid-30s.
Right.
I want to reach these young people who need to know that this whole world is not as big as you think it is. And it's out there. And so you can have so much adventure and so much fun if you just stop being afraid. Because I remember people saying to us when we were leaving, oh, I'd love to do what you're doing. Oh, I'd love to do it. And I said, well, how are you doing? Well, you just do it. Mm-hmm. Sure, I was scared. Sure, you know, anything could happen.
Yeah.
But if you don't just do it.
Right.
I remember reading a book. Remember I told you in the Dominican, I became very spiritual. And I cannot remember who wrote it, but it was called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyways. Mm-hmm. And that is just so important for people to realize. So it's like if I had let my fear of flying overtake me, I could never have done all those things that I did.
Yeah.
My mother told me that I was so stubborn. She hoped that I had a kid just like me.
Oh, she'd be so proud of you.
Well,
she
and you
so
do have.
I am stubborn. When I make up my mind to do something, if I can do it, I'll do it. By Jesus, I'll do it.
Well, thank you for doing this today. I think that maybe this is a good spot.
Just,
what were you going to say?
She's such a, Linda,
I know, we could keep going, right?
But so it's like, okay, so the book is definitely a must, right? I want to read it.
No, have you ever really thought about selling? Because it feels to me like it could be movie rights, because it tells a few different stories.
Research that we've done, Linda, it would be just an awesome story through your lens in that time period,
and what
in San Francisco.
Cisco and beyond to the Caribbean. And
do you have one more message to your grandchildren that you want to say to them about the bookie granny that you are? And other than
very
face
sophisticated.
Your fear, right? Face your fear.
Yes,
maybe.
Exactly. It was one of the greatest moments in my life when my granddaughter told me that she wanted to leave Costa Rica and explore her heritage as Canadian and move to Canada.
It is a small world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for today and for adding to a really spice up our little podcast.
Central America is not what I ever thought it was going to be, Paul. I mean, he set one place on fire. You know, I have a stroke, and now we have a bookie friend. So yes. It's like, I can't wait for the next 2 weeks in Panama.
Always,
so thank you, Linda.
Always more to come.
It's been a lot of fun.
We're Rich and Paul, the Hotel Guys. You can find us at hotelguys.com. We're on Instagram, hotelguys1. Wow, thank you, and keep traveling, everybody.